I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to episode 52 of The School for Dumb Women, the podcast where we explain the subjects you slept through when they taught them in school. I'm your host woman, panic napper Hannah Varrell. With me is, I'll sleep when I'm dead, 90s party girl Alexandra Haddo.
Live fast, die young, leave a corpse filled with kebab meat. That's my motto, Hannah.
And pretends to be asleep to avoid household chores, Caroline O'Donoghue.
I'm a feminist, Hannah. I believe in equal rights, but also I'm a delicate princess and I shouldn't be expected to do anything ever.
The hypocrisy is delicious. This week we're talking about woman's four-legged best friend, Lindsay Lohan, and that hole in your stomach that feels like fear, but is actually your navel.
We should state that Lindsay Lohan does not have four legs. There was a comma after that statement.
Yes. Or does she?
Let's start the show.
So, Caroline, when I was younger, my daddy couldn't afford to buy me one of you.
I am the four-legged, velvet-nosed keeper of young girls' dreams. I am the humble pony.
Oh.
Oh, guys, can we talk about ponies?
Yes, please.
First of all, your relationships to ponies, tell me.
Always loved them.
Yeah.
Thought they were the most beautiful thing in the world.
Yeah.
Really wanted to go horse riding. Didn't really start horse riding until I was like 13, mm-hmm. by which point it's kind of not...
A little bit of a late start, yeah.
A little bit of a late starter. And then did horse riding for like 3 years and then was a teenager.
And then just grew out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alex?
Wasn't asked
at all.
Excuse me.
How dare you?
Not bothered. I mean, I rode a pony on like a beach.
But you were just like, this is fine.
I feel personally offended.
I actually am pissed off at you.
never asked.
What do you think about them now?
Yeah, nice.
Did you read any pony books or any pony media?
No.
Have you seen the Lloyd's TSB advert with the black horse?
Yes, I enjoy him a lot.
He is good.
He's metaphorical.
Yeah. Small fact about ponies is that the difference between a pony and a horse is that a pony is under 14 hands too.
Oh.
Everything above that is a horse.
Huh.
So I asked Twitter today who their favourite pony was and what was their pony like. And obviously, I want to say that, I mean, you can own a dog, you can own a parakeet, but like no one ever owns a pony.
Oh, unless you're like mega butts rich.
No, not even those people own ponies.
Really? Because, you just mean that you have a pony, you don't own a pony.
Exactly. No one can truly own a pony.
Oh, right. I see. In like a spiritual sense.
Very much in
taking
a spiritual
the
sense.
Taking the own out of pony.
And in the same, in very much the same way, everyone owns the pony. that's how they put the own in pony.
There it is. I was getting there and I was like,
it
what
was
is this?
Very good. It's very, very good. And because like when you ask somebody like about their pony experiences, they're always like, my pony was named Goggles. And it's like, oh, what do you mean your pony? It's like, yeah, I rode him twice a week for a year in like a pony school. Do you know what I mean? It's very that.
My friend Georgina actually had horses and a pony. Yeah. I think I went out with them once.
You don't need to own a pony to have a pony is what I'm saying, guys.
Yes.
You can just literally have a pony that lives sort of near you that you can walk to and feed over a fence and that's your pony.
I rode a naughty donkey called Mary on a beach once.
That's my favourite sentence I've ever heard. I rode a naughty donkey called Mary once.
Like on a beach, not just, you know...
Yeah.
About. Actually, I used to feed the ponies in the fields in the village though.
Yeah, everyone's got a lovely.
She had such bucolic upbringings. I didn't have any ponies near me.
Well, you're a city kid. You were probably graffitiing the ponies.
Yeah. All the time.
But I want to share some of them, our listeners, and what their pony responses were.
Okay.
Cat Brown is a famous horse owner person, isn't mm-hmm. she? She's oh, like Hepburn is really, really good about writing about horse riding and stuff. And she said that there were four Harrys at the stable she visited, and hers yeah. was Harry Batiste.
Ooh, the dry shampoo.
I know. I was like, work. And then she went on to marry a man called Harry.
Oh, wow.
So the relationship between pony and love affair is already very strong with Cat Brown.
That's so weird because really. My pony was called Random Man in a Club.
Okay, the other pony response I got lots of pony responses, but the other one I thought was really, really great. And if you read any pony media as a child or a teenager, this will be very, like, resonant.
I just keep thinking you're saying pony media but in a Cockney accent. Read your pony media.
This one's from Kirsty Merrin, which is a very, like, pony book name.
Yeah.
Like, Kirsty's first day at Pony Club was going great.
Kirsty brought her brushes with her.
Yeah. The saddle said her name on it.
Oh, my God. I was, like, climbing a tree while you guys were reading these pony books.
So she came back to me with, literally, this is the entire tweet. Bonnie was mischievous and naughty, but very lovable at heart, and amongst other lovely things, once rescued my mum from a sudden lightning storm. R.I.P. my sweet Prince Bonnie.
What?
Wow, people are really into ponies.
That is
a pony
literally
book.
Literally a pony book, yeah.
All pony books are that storyline.
Because
is like,
the pony has to do something to prove its personality. It can't just right. be like a lovely pony.
Do the ponies talk, or is it just like a girl with
no, will it rescue
her
no,
mum?
Alex.
Okay, sorry.
Every pony book is the same, whether it's Saddle Club or any of the other like adjacent brands, which is like a group of girls who are like best friends and they all have ponies and they're all like separately good at a pony thing. Like
right.
brushing pony yeah. or feeding pony or
jumping.
With a flat in your hand, jumping pony. And then there's like, and then halfway through, there's a kind of like vaguely rural crisis, like
right.
a lightning storm or
yeah.
like,
or like a county fair that
yeah.
is going to be called off.
Oh, totally. Yeah, yeah. It's very community.
Okay.
And then the pony helps and saves someone, or they save the pony and show their own bravery. So the pony shows bravery or the girls show bravery.
Right.
So anyway, I've talked about ponies for 5 minutes. I said nothing factual. I wanted to know why I love ponies so much. Why girls in general love them so deeply. Like, I always think it's like, you know, you're post-Barbies, but you're pre-boys kind of thing. It's
yeah.
that lovely little space in the middle.
Yeah.
Generally between about 8 and 14
yeah.
kind of thing.
I think what I really liked about ponies and, like, riding was, like, you feel so powerful because
yes.
you kind of have the control. I mean, to a certain extent, it's still, like, an animal.
You're still, like, walking around a dust ring with an instructor.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, you're not doing anything.
And breaking your hymen.
Yes, the hymen is important.
But, like, to some extent, you have control over this, like, huge animal and you're, like, you know, a couple of metres up in the air and, yeah, I don't know, you've got
yeah.
a hat on, you feel kind of invincible.
Well, that's a really good point. So, actually, guys, I consulted an expert on this.
Ooh.
What? You can tell our passion for any subject, whether when we talk to a third
yeah.
party and we don't just look at Wikipedia. So I talked to Susanna Forrest. She is the author of a brilliant book called The Age of the Horse.
That is also another pony club name, Susanna Forrest.
Yeah.
Very
that
much
is like
so.
Nominative
but she
determinism.
Was, no, but she runs the pony club. She's not one of the girls.
Yeah.
She's one of the like
oh,
mums.
Completely. She's like strict but fair.
Mm. And Susanna sort of Forrest was an ex-pro. And then her husband left her, so she set up this pony club.
Totally. Like,
oh, I got a bit Joan Collins with it.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
it's fine. You're still within the oeuvre of ponies, so it's fine.
Okay.
But she sort of, I asked her, like, her book, The Age of the Horse, was very much about, like, the relationship between women and horses and ponies. And I asked her, like, what the whole thing was. And she's like, you know, it's a really interesting thing because it is very much about power.
Yeah.
Like, you can control this animal to a certain extent. Like, you can go really fast with it. You can jump over stuff. It's great.
Yeah.
And as well, because traditionally, it was one of, like, the few things that women were allowed to do and kind of encouraged to do. Like,
right, yeah.
you always think of, like, all the ladies back in the day, what were the things? So it was, like, drawing, painting, playing the piano, riding, like, having an
yeah.
excellent seat is a very graceful thing to do.
Yeah.
But actually, riding is a really physical, intense, like, quite painful experience as well, just with how many muscles that you're using. And so even when you're riding side saddle, like, you still have this sort of area in your life of autonomy and power, and like you have a relationship with this like huge beautiful animal
yeah,
kind
yeah.
of thing. So she reckons it really sort of started from that place and sort of grew and grew as women like became more competitive in the sort of horsey sports. And like
yeah.
it's actually one of the very few sports, and obviously there are, you know, different experiences, different stories. Well, there are very few sports that's quite inclusive of women. Like, obviously, jockeys tend to be all men. But in terms of, like, the society of hunting, all that stuff, like, you could be a manhunter or a womanhunter and, yeah, like, no one gives a shit, really.
And in the Olympics, there's always, like, female riders, aren't there?
Yeah, just show jumping and stuff.
Weird trotty stuff.
Dressage.
Thank you, yes, dressage.
Dressage where the horse dance. And she had so many interesting things to say, Susanna. I could literally have talked to her all day. But one of the other things that she came across is, like, the way that women relate to horses as creatures.
Mm.
So, like, they're these very, very beautiful things. They're always in paintings. They're, like, we know from art that we have always thought of them as, like, society as, like, beautiful.
Yeah.
The way we talk about horses and the way we talk about women historically are very similar. Like, in the sense that, like, they're beautiful, but they have to be controlled.
Yeah.
That is what the language about both things. Yeah. And that the whole thing about breaking horses as well, the whole breaking a spirit, like, it's like...
What's that?
That's when you have, like, a really young pony and it's, like, a wild animal, and you have to, like, teach it to have a saddle on its back and, like, a bit in its mouth and everything. And so that's called breaking it in. So eventually it'll be, like, okay with having a saddle on. It'll be okay with having, like, a person riding it.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
It's essentially domesticating a creature that's wild. And Susanna sort of reckons that, like, women relate to these animals through that in a way. And she actually... Did you guys ever read or watch Black Beauty when you were a kid?
Yes.
What a film.
So good.
So good.
I don't know if I think I have read it, but I've never seen it. But I was very young.
This is a nice change, because normally I'm the one that doesn't know pop culture things.
And Alex, suddenly... you're never out of the loop on these things. It's actually shocking and scary to see you so confused.
I don't know what's happening.
But Black Beauty, everyone will remember there was this... Black Beauty was the main horse, but his sort of girlfriend was Ginger. And she gets, like, broken in. She, like, gets really mishandled, and she gets, like, shipped from, like, house to house and from business to business until eventually she just sort of dies.
Oh.
And, like, Susanna sort of describes her as, like, the great indignant feminist, because, like, the way that... Because the book is very much told through the horse's perspective, and it's like, you read
the
that
horse
scene,
is the first person.
It's straight from the horse's mouth.
Yeah, right, straight from the horse's mouth. And it's like, you read that scene, that breaking scene, and it reads like a rape scene. It reads like just like being forced upon, being controlled, it being about control. And, like, I think that's so fucking interesting, don't you?
Yeah.
It's do you think we'll ever look back and be like, oh, we treated horses quite badly? But it's just because it's so
indoctrinated. I think we do it currently. Yeah. I mean, how many horses die in the Grand National every year?
No, that's what I mean. In the future, we'll look back and think, why did we allow that to happen?
Yeah. And also, like, what Susanna said was really, really interesting to me. She said that, like, it is sort of... Because when you go through your pony phase... What I used to do anyway, I used to, like, cycle down to the pony yard that was near our house. And I was just sort of... There was nothing for me to do except for, like... hang around and, like, in like riding boots and jodhpurs and, like, an old jumper belonging to my dad, and just sort of see if anyone needed help, just because I wanted to be close to these animals so badly. And, like, she sort of talks about it as if, like, it's a kind of a space for you to just kind of exist outside of the how you look or, like, you know, how you're socialized in school.
Yeah,
it's just very, like, you kind of exist in this very sloppy, unfeminine way on these pony yards. And I think lots of girls have that experience, don't they?
Yeah. Not me, but you guys.
I feel like because you grew up in, like, hardy working class Corby, you're like, these fucking privileged wankers. These middle class pricks.
Yeah, because I lived in Corby, but then I moved like literally a mile down the road. But it was a village attached to Corby. And there was, like, ponies and horses in a few fields around the village, I guess. But yeah, it was working class area, so it wasn't like you ever rode them, you just saw them.
Yeah.
They were in, like, little paddocks. And it was still very, not very urban, that's not fair, but, like, it wasn't idyllic countryside, do you know?
Yeah, it wasn't the kind of place where, like, yeah, like, you see, like, 12-year-old girls with their, like, half livery ponies.
No, like, I see horse riding and that entire industry as, like, something totally alien to me and very posh.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas I think with the sort of riding a school experience for most people, it's just like, yeah, it's what you do for, like, a tenner an hour once a week kind of thing. It's very removed from that.
I've often thought I'd like to learn to ride a horse, but I've never got around to it.
Oh, we'll take you.
Yeah.
Or maybe we'll just get a pantomime costume and...
Yeah.
Me and Hannah will just be two ends of the horse.
Shotgun,
I'll be the arse.
Shotgun the front, yeah.
Yeah.
Alex's first ride.
Guys, I'm not very pleased with you. I nearly had to cancel this week's mixer because Caroline accidentally littered and you didn't pick it up. last Thursday.
Caroline, that's appalling.
Actually, no, Alex, you're not innocent either. You've been calling footballers bums on Twitter.
Sorry, how is this relevant?
Well, you both have bad social credit, which coincidentally is the topic of this week's Women Who Code Mixer.
Oh, no. My terrible personality has been brought to light.
Also, I think I've been perving on footballers' bums, not calling them bums.
So in the Women Who Code Mixer, we take an element of coding or tech and try our best to work out what the heck it all means. And this week we're venturing over to China to check out their social credit program. Alex, you investigated credit scores back in episode 7 very early on in the podcast, and they were nonsense, weren't they?
Yes.
Oh, that was the first like proper angry one we did, weren't we? We were really pissed off.
Yeah. And then we were like, is it okay for this podcast to be angry?
And it was.
I guess so.
And they saw that it was good.
Yeah, so the idea of social credit is it's a very similar idea to kind of credit scores. You get points for being a good member of society, essentially. And at the moment, there's a big program in China where they're hoping to have a big national database, like a nationalized social credit score for everyone by 2020.
And this that's going to Black Mirror.
No, exactly. Yeah, yeah. No, people have said that. Apart from it's not necessarily people rating each other. So there's an episode of Black Mirror, just in case anyone's not seen it, where people rate each other based on their interactions. So I bought a coffee from you and you gave it to me with the wrong milk or whatever, or I didn't say thank you. So you can rate me down and I could rate you down. And then that means that you have less credit to use elsewhere. So if you want an upgrade on a flight, you might not be able to get it. So that's the idea behind the Black Mirror episode. And this is kind of the same thing. Like, basically, people will be ranked on things like what they've bought, who they're hanging out with, if they've had any minor infractions, like traffic violations and things like that. And it's goddamn scary, guys.
That's really, really scary and horrible.
So what's the payoff if you have a high social credit score in China?
So you can show off about it,
right?
Firstly. So they're hoping that the system will be in place in 2020. And for the minute, they're kind of testing it out with 8 different pilot systems run by different companies. And there's one run by a company called Sesame Credit, which is part of Alibaba, which is like a massive kind of Amazon thing. Mm-hmm. And they've hooked up with this dating app that encourages people to share their social credit score with potential matches.
No.
It's so strange. So you'll see someone and be like, oh, they've only got 85. Like, I don't think I'm interested in that person.
That's horrendous.
Isn't that strange?
Also, what have we learnt about giving people all your data?
Yeah.
What's weird, though, is that in ways, because of virtue of China being far away, it's very easy to point the finger at them. But there are so many ways in which our culture is set up in a similar way. Like clout was a thing that happened for a while.
What's that?
It never took off. People would be given scores out of 100 based on their followers, how many followers their followers has, the quality of their followers. And then it was all totted up into like a number. And also, like, we rate Ubers, we rate our Just Eat experience.
Yeah.
So there's a planning document from China's State Council. Most of this information, by the way, is from a really good BBC article, which you should go and read. And apparently their whole idea behind social credit is that it will forge a public opinion environment that trust keeping is glorious. Which is really scary, isn't it? Because that's not trust. That's like blackmailing people to be like, look, you need to, you know, you need to be the best version of yourself. You need to not do anything wrong. You need to not hang out with any kind of insalubrious characters.
Yeah.
There was one thing that said, like, if you play a video game for 10 hours every day, you will be classified as like lazy. And so you'll be marked down. Your social credit score will be marked down. If you're buying nappies, you're probably a parent. And so you're responsible. So your social credit marking will go
up. Fucking hell.
That is terrifying.
Isn't that so scary? Just for the sake of like argument, there are some people that think it could be a good thing.
Yeah.
Apparently in China, many people don't own houses, cards or credit cards. So their credit score in terms of like financial credit score isn't available because they don't have those products. Yeah. So for the people who don't have credit history, it actually could be quite good for them to get a social credit history to be like, look, we're trustworthy.
That is a really good point.
Yeah, but then it will make things happen. So, for example, if you want to rent, they have an umbrella rental service in China, which I think is very sweet. And if you want to rent an umbrella, if you have a good social credit score, the idea is you won't have to put a deposit down because they know that you're a good person and you're going to return the umbrella because you have a good social credit score.
As well, in theory, it's a really lovely and refreshing idea that, like, what if the value that we placed on people was not about how much they earned or how much they were putting in their bank account, but how nice a person they were? Everyone wants to live in that world.
Yeah.
But once you formalize it, it becomes mental.
Yeah, and it's that whole thing about, like, going back to my English degree, Paradise Lost by Milton, the whole idea that humans have to have the ability to sin in order for them to choose not to sin and in order for them to then be a good person. Like, you can't just say, well, you don't have sin anymore. Like, you can't physically sin. You can only be good. But then where's the kind of, you know,
comparison? Completely, like, compliance where's isn't the same thing as morality, is it?
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Anyway, so that was our Women Who Code mixer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unusually serious one, but I liked it.
Yeah,
don't
definitely.
Don't go to China. Yeah. Also, I had 3 wanks today, so my social rating is very low.
3?
Oh, yeah, working from home.
Oh, of course. Yeah, never mind. Alex, your segment today is about a gifted child performer who has recently fallen on hard times. Is it me?
Yes, it is.
Oh, segment on me? Okay.
Well, similar. It's about a sort of strawberry-haired, ginger-ish lady who is probably quite nice. No, my segment today isn't on you, Caroline, but it was inspired by something you wrote this week. Caroline wrote a great piece on thepool.com talking about the sort of party girl set of the noughties, Paris Hilton, Lindsay Lohan. Would you class Britney Spears in that, Caroline?
Yes, I would. I think she was slightly older than them when that was happening.
Like Nicole Richie.
Yeah.
Give us a quick summary.
So I wrote this piece about Lindsay Lohan. It started out specifically about Lindsay Lohan because she did this big interview with New York Times where she revealed, first of all, that she wasn't giving them any photographs. So there was this big profile that didn't feature any pictures of her, just people around her, which is very odd. And then she also revealed that she lives in Dubai now. Why does she live in Dubai now? She lives in Dubai because it's the only place in the world where she can afford any sort of privacy. And I found what I got really fascinated by was, like, isn't it interesting that, like, one of the most famous women in the Western world at a certain time, the only place she can find any solace in a feminist society is in a non-feminist society, because it's the only place where she can get any privacy.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking about the Wild Girl set of the early noughties, and I remember being really coached to hate them because they were so supposed to be so diabolical or whatever.
Yeah.
And where I think all of that came from, and I think it's so fascinating, is so the internet in the early noughties, it was the first time everybody had the internet in their house, and there was a lack of regulation and a lack of ownership. People were very anonymous. It was like a lot of like celebrity blogs that were being updated in real time. Paris Hilton is one of the big ones. So this like celebrity gossip industry exploded almost overnight. But the pool of celebrities that we were drawing from were relatively small. Like there were like a dozen people essentially, and they were these young women who were just going out and partying a lot. Whereas now we have so many celebrities to choose from because of YouTube and Instagram. They all sort of share the flack. But these women just got all this hate and all this coverage.
So I read the article, and if you haven't read it, please go and read it. It's very interesting. And you were talking about, you know, exactly how much grief they got. And so, and Lindsay Lohan, I think, had it the worst.
Yeah, definitely.
Because I think she, you know, coped with it, as we all would do, you know, kind of chaotically.
And I also think that the reason that she got it the worst was because we didn't see Paris Hilton as a child, but we did see Lindsay Lohan as a child.
Yeah,
so
that's
it was
true.
Very much like she was America's daughter gone wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Because I was looking into her backstory. I'm not going to go, you know, full biography, but most of you probably know she was a child star. She was working in adverts and commercials and stuff from the age of 3.
Oh, that's so young.
She was considered a veteran at 10.
When she was doing Parent Trap?
A little bit older than that, but
you can just imagine her coming into like a casting meeting with a cigarette, like a mink on, and lying, being like, "Where do you want me? Where's
and
my
it,
mark?"
Yeah, and her sort of origin story, like if she was a superhero, it's kind of what you would expect as well. Like her dad was a Wall Street trader, her mum was a singer and a dancer. They've got together and got divorced twice. Like you know, there's this very sort of like glamorous woman and a Wall Street trader, and didn't quite make the top leader.
It feels
of society.
Very 80s. It feels very Reagan era, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah, it feels very like not Wolf of Wall Street. What's the Michael Douglas one? You know, Money Never Sleeps. Wall Street. Literally, it is called Wall Street. You know, but like that 80s greed and the, you know, the shoulder pads and
the,
you can just see
more,
it all now, like the big hair and that more. Put your daughter on TV at 3. You know, it doesn't sound like they needed the money. I don't know that. But yeah, she's kind of thrust into this limelight. And of course, she went a bit mad. And like you say, she was being, like, celebrities have been doing what these women were doing and what Lindsay Lohan was doing since time immemorial. But there was not a million cameras, there wasn't phone cameras, there wasn't the internet. You know, Hollywood celebrities, have like, nobody can cope with that level of fame. Mm-hmm. So they've all been sort of chaotic in their, like, relatively. But then Lindsay Lohan just hit a new wave of it and was like patient zero, basically.
So when did she first start to, like, you know, get a personality and start kicking off and sort of be an object of, like, rather than, oh, this actress Lindsay Lohan, be like, oh, that troublemaker Lindsay Lohan? Like, at what age did that sort of start?
It was kind of just before she filmed Herbie, I think.
Yes, correct. Yeah. Yeah, I completely
up to that, she'd been like, she did Mean Girls, which is a great film written by Tina Fey. She got a lot of praise for that.
Mean Girls is genuinely iconic. Like, it's going to be remembered in like 20 years. It's like Our Breakfast Club.
And I do feel like she was almost on a knife edge and she could have been somebody iconic now. But it was just too much, too soon.
Yeah.
And she is iconic, but in a completely different way.
Yeah. Like, she was praised for her early appearances. She was in other films as well, like Freaky Friday with Jamie Lee Curtis. Stuff like that. But then she just, from Herbie, I think she split up with...
How old was she when she was filming Herbie?
So she was 19. When it started filming.
That's not as young as I would have thought, necessarily.
Yeah. But, like, she's 32 now. In fact, she just recently celebrated her 32nd birthday. And I don't know whether that was why that profile was on. Yeah. I honestly thought she was, like, 36, 37. Like, a lot old. I'm 30. A lot older than me. And when I was read that she just turned 32,
yeah,
I was like, she's less than 2 years older than me. And she has endured, like, the worst. It's so strange, isn't
it?
You know?
It's so weird because growing up with Lindsay Lohan, it's like, oh, when I was 10, she was 14 and she was in The Parent Trap, and when I was 14, she was 18.
Yeah.
And like, it felt like we were kind of growing up on the same trajectory, but now it feels like she's like lived 1,000 lifetimes and like lived through many wars and seen many ghosts. And I'm still, it's weird. It's like our time space continuum like slipped out of like
massively
step with each other.
Yeah, it's like, it's exactly that. I feel like I know 7 different long term relationships and long term narratives with Lindsay Lohan and this era and that era and when she was with Samantha Ronson for a while.
Yeah.
And like, I think apparently, you know, she started to, you know, feel the pressure after she broke up with, I'm going to try and say this, Wilmer Valderrama.
Yes, Fez from that 70s show.
Yes, and she had quite a long-term relationship with him, and then that, so I guess that was when your first big relationship ends. Everybody's a bit of a mess, let alone when you're sort of the cash cow and you're this young woman where these studios are depending on you.
Mm. Yeah.
And you're like, actually, no, fuck off. Like, I'm going to go out and get drunk with my friends. But as a famous person, that's like, you're mental. And then, of course, everything is more extreme for them. And she's developed, you know, loads of like substance issues over the years and stuff. And like, you do, you know, she is the punchline to a lot of jokes. And I've worked at magazines where they've had obituaries ready to go.
Or
I've had to like update picture files and stuff because they've literally been like, she is going to die soon. And she seems to have...
That's chilling.
Yeah, it's horrible, isn't it? And she went through these like extremely chaotic years, and I think she was on a lot of medication, a lot of drugs. She had all these... I mean, she had an abusive relationship quite recently. She's accused him of being abusive and stealing £24,000 worth of her possessions.
Oh, God.
And he was like a millionaire or billionaire or something.
Yeah, he was just Russian socialite.
Yeah.
And he strangled her on a beach that she now owns.
Oh my God, that's amazing. I didn't know that she owned that specific beach.
Yeah, in that profile, they're on that beach and she has this like big club that she started called Lohan House.
Yes.
And she said, the minute that happened, the first thing I thought was, oh no. And the second thing I thought was, this is going to be my beach.
Wow.
I was like, see, you fucking queen. Like,
oh, good on her.
This is the thing, I think, because I looked at an interview of her quite recently and she kind of revealed that she owns this club in Athens, and now she's, like you say, got a Lohan Beach House, which I think is in Mykonos in Greece. And she's also designing a makeup line, and she's also building an island in Dubai. And it was the Dubai thing that really sparked my interest for this section, because I was like, wow, she's living in Dubai. How strange and how remote. You know, how much has she had to take herself out of her whole life?
Let's remind ourselves that in Dubai, it is technically illegal to have sex outside of marriage.
Yeah.
Like, this is an international party girl who was called a slut her entire young adult life.
Yeah.
And she lives in a place where it's not legal to have sex. You
and
know
it's
what I mean?
Almost like for famous people, or like for young women like her who's in the public eye, it's got to be one extreme or the other.
Yeah.
It's got to be like, oh, well, I'm celibate and I'm living in Dubai and I'm living a chaste life and I'm clean. Or she's out of control. She's on drugs. She's on alcohol. She's falling out of capture. She's definitely had surgery, and she, you know, she would look so much nicer if she didn't feel like she had to do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know that. But you can't
question the journey that got her to that feeling like she has to do that.
Yeah, exactly. And I just feel like I never really felt sorry for Lindsay Lohan before. And then your article sparked that, and then when I looked into it, I was like, God, and I really hope she's on a much better path now.
Yeah.
Because she recently celebrated her 32nd birthday in Lohan Beach House in the place that she owns, which is a club or a bar, restaurant type place, with her mum. Her mum was definitely there. I don't think her dad was there anymore. I think she's had some troubles with her dad as well. Yeah, with her mum and a few close friends. Yeah. And I was like, God, could this be actually a happy ending?
Yeah.
Because, like you say, you never really think of Paris Hilton as being the victim to all this, because she's always been... I mean, she's the
Paris
Hilton
Hilton's
dynasty.
Paris Hilton's always been in control, though,
Paris
of the
Hilton,
narrative.
For her, like, a TV show and the fame and everything was almost like a different type of fame.
Completely. And the difference between Paris Hilton and Lindsay Lohan is that Lindsay Lohan sort of like grew up in the studio system that was very patriarchal, and she was this cash cow. Like, she did like 4 movies in a row that were all smash hits for that demographic. Like, but she was still living in this very tight studio system that was almost like the 1950s or something, and she was so controlled by that. And so obviously whenever she got any freedom, she just bolted into the fucking horizon. Whereas Paris Hilton created a new form of fame that then influenced the Kardashians kind of thing. She was like, I'm a party girl who goes all over the world, drinks, and, you know, meets famous people, and that's my career.
Yeah.
And she was
just
so
self-aware.
Just put
a camera on me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I do the same thing.
And what I always think about as well is Robert Downey Jr. He was the exact same trajectory as her. Young, talented actor everyone's rooting for, has this massive substance abuse problem, in trouble with the law loads of times, lays low for a long time, everyone thinks he's going to die, he's in prison for a bit. And then he rises from the ashes, because men are more beautiful and more interesting when they're 35, 40, whatever. And then he becomes literally the most famous actor in the world. Like, and I don't think Lindsay Lohan is ever going to be given that second chance.
No, and but I don't know. Maybe she'll have a sort of Mickey Rourke, Robert Downey Jr. style comeback. I hope she does.
This would be a sad story anyway, but she's genuinely so talented. Like, she's her, like, from when she was a kid, like, her comic timing's always been great. Like, she's just really good at what she does. And there's, think about, like, there's so many roles out there that could be great for a 35-year-old Lindsay Lohan. And that we'll probably never see.
Yeah.
Because the best thing for Lindsay Lohan is for her to keep on living quietly in Dubai. Like, for her.
Yeah, because that's the way she's going to stay well.
I hope she does have a Mickey Rourke moment.
Yeah,
you know?
When
I hope
she's
she does
ready.
Have her, the wrestler, you know.
Yeah. Anyway, we're rooting for you, Lindsay.
We
come
love
back.
You, Lindsay.
We're out here.
Team Lindsay. Yeah. Team Yoko. If we ever talk about a woman on this podcast, unless she's Mother Teresa, we're on her team.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hannah, your segment this episode is about something that I finger in a comforting way. What is it?
And what does your finger smell like when it comes out?
It smells like candy floss.
Does it?
No, it just looks like candy floss.
It smells a bit weird and fishy, doesn't it?
Mine smells like cheese.
Mine smells a bit like Fanny. I don't know why.
Really?
I guess because it's near there.
Oh, I was joking. I don't think mine smells.
Go on, have a little
rummage. Really? Sniff. Go
okay,
on.
Hang on, I'm doing it right now.
Okay.
Right, she's getting in there.
Oh, I was about to say it's minty, which sounds like bollocks, but I used Imperial leather mint shower gel today.
Oh my god, the best shower gel.
We'll never know the original smell of my belly button.
Yes, we are talking about belly buttons. God, belly buttons are weird. Like, when you're a baby, you get fed through this.
I know, yeah. It's so weird. It's so squeamish and strange.
And then my question is, so you obviously get birthed.
Yes.
You cut it, you tie it.
Yes.
It falls off in a gross thing.
Yes, have you ever seen that? I Googled pictures of it, and I've not seen an umbilical cord get clamped and it sort of like dry up and like fall off in real life, but I pictures, have. Oh my God.
Right. Guys, can I tell you something that you're not going to believe me, but it's true.
Go on.
So when I was about 14, I was looking at my belly button. I was literally navel-gazing, which is the age to do it. And I sort of like felt something in there. And like, I've got an innie, it's a pretty deep innie.
Yeah.
And like, I was just like fascinated. And I was like, what's that? It felt almost like a scab or something.
Yeah.
Like, I have a scab in there. And then like, I dug in with a tweezers and just sort of like separated the folds of skin and found a little tiny bit of brown sort of scabby.
Ooh.
Not scab, but like, it was like protruding. Like almost like, you know, when you have a wiggly mole. You have a really wiggly mole.
Oh my God.
Wait, was it attached to you still?
It was attached to me.
Oh!
I literally, no one ever believes me when I tell them the story, so I've stopped telling it. But Why would they not believe you? Because no one believes that your umbilical cord can stay on for 14 years.
Oh, oh yeah, it's still in there on the inside.
Yeah, but like I just like plucked it off and there was like a tiny bit of like scab blood or whatever, but like it was a bit of umbilical cord.
Oh my God, you've literally like done the final bit of your own birth.
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
Oh my God, you cut your own cord.
I'm so glad to get that off my chest, guys.
Oh, and out of your belly button.
Absolutely. Out of my belly button.
Absolutely disgusting.
But what happens to the tube once? Because like now you don't get fed through there. So is there just like a...
Yes, that was my question that I've been wondering for years and years, actually.
Same.
And I Googled it, of course.
Obvs.
I Googled, you know, what happens to all the sort of stuff that connects your belly button to... your stomach.
Yeah.
And essentially what happens is once you're born, obviously you take your first breath and everything sort of like gets rewired.
Activated, right?
Yeah. So your lungs start working like through your breathing and everything, and you start being able to like drink milk and digest stuff in that way. And basically all the tubes that sort of were connecting your belly button to your stomach just sort of aren't used anymore, and they sort of like shrink into ligaments.
Oh,
yeah. And there's a ligament which connects your belly button to your bladder, which is why sometimes if you sort of like wriggle your finger around in it, you can feel it in your bladder.
Ooh.
Or your nether region.
You? And that's where you push on your belly button, you need to pee.
Yeah.
Oh my
well,
God.
Well, maybe that's also you pushing down on your bladder.
Maybe. But my sister used to do that. She's like run around the house chasing me and like trying to push down my belly button so I'd wet myself.
Yeah. Oh my God. One time when I was like 16, my boyfriend was around.
Ew.
And my brother got me on the floor, stood on my stomach, and I farted. It's actually hilarious. I'm like,
that is bants.
Yeah.
But were you like, oh my God, I've proved to my boyfriend that I farted?
I was like, Tom! God, but no, it was funny. Like, we all found it funny, but I was secretly mortified, obviously.
Oh, God, I remember having boyfriends as a teenager, just always having stomach cramps because of the farts you're holding all the time. It's the worst.
Yeah,
the football.
Anyway, so anyone who's had a baby will be absolutely laughing at my ignorance of, like, you know, how disgusting belly buttons are and, like, what even happens there? Have you ever heard that, like, the way the doctor knots the belly button or, like, clamps it or whatever is what affects whether your belly button is an innie or an outie?
No.
No.
Have you not?
I always... this is probably really stupid. I always thought that, like, if you were fatter, you got an outie because it pushed it out.
I don't think that's true.
Okay.
Yeah, but I'd somewhere heard... or like came to believe that it was the way the doctor kind of like tied up your belly button, even though I'm like, no, they don't tie it up though, do they? Because they clamp it. But that was what affected like the shape of your belly button. And so you'd be like, oh, the doctor gave you a nice one. And it was like, oh, cool. Because I do have a lovely belly button.
Oh, do you?
Oh.
Give us a look.
Oh.
Ah, very discreet.
Nice. Yeah. Very classic.
It looks a bit like a semicolon.
Classic T shape or J.
Yeah.
Kind of J
shape. Yeah, lovely.
For the listeners at home, Hannah has an exquisite BB.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, babe.
BB! Brooklyn Beckham.
Oh my God.
But yeah, obviously, like the way the umbilical cord is cut has nothing to do with actually how your belly button looks in the end.
Oh.
Because the bit of the cord that's still left on you shrivels up. And the bit that turns into your belly button, that's just scar tissue. That's just a scar. from like
a TV kind
of,
jab.
Oh. It sort of like pushes the umbilical cord off and creates a little, its own little scar.
Oh.
Yeah, which is kind of cool.
It's apparently, like a mood ring.
I know. Apparently, only 10% of people have outies.
Wow.
Yeah, which I would have thought like.
You're considering like innie or an outie is a question. Like,
yeah.
I think. One fact about belly buttons that I know that's probably on your list, so sorry to spoil them, is that Alfred Hitchcock didn't have a belly button.
Ooh!
Ew!
Also, why? Karolina Kurkova, who's a model, a supermodel like Victoria's Secret, doesn't have one either. And that's because, well, in her case,
I know her.
Really?
Of her.
In her case, it's because she had surgery during infancy on her belly button, I assume, and so it kind of just, there's kind of like a dimple, but there's not really anything there. And sometimes when she does photo shoots, people Photoshop it in so that people don't get confused.
Yeah, I wonder, like, if you were looking at, like, a lingerie billboard and, like, would you be able to put your finger on why you felt weird looking at it? Would it be like, something's wrong about this image. What is it?
Apparently, when you're pregnant, sometimes your innie can get pushed to an outie.
See, yeah, it happens
this
all the time.
This is why I thought that the amount of, like, whatever's in your stomach influences, like, it out. I always thought that it pushed it out. Because I've seen pregnant women with outies.
It does. They say there's a word for it. Do they just say, have you popped?
Oh!
Gross.
Which is when it goes to, like, but.
I've also seen, like fat men on the beach with outies, so.
Yeah. But, I've seen thin people with outies as
makes
well.
Makes it sound like I go to the beach to observe fat men.
Yeah.
I have a list of celebrity outies, actually.
Ooh!
Giselle Bündchen.
No.
Yes.
Is she?
She should you be like a representative for a charity.
I know! Jerry Halliwell. I know she's got a different surname now, but I can't remember it.
Don't care.
Jerry Horner.
Jerry Horner.
No, she's never going to be Jerry Horner. Sorry, bitch.
Katie Holmes. Yes.
Oh, I bet that's why the Scientologists threw her out.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Michael Jackson.
Oh, all right.
Big old outie.
Doesn't anymore.
Yep.
Did he ever come outie?
Oh.
Oh, no.
Oh.
Poor Michael.
There's a shit ton of bacteria in your belly button. Mm. Mine does, like, I don't know, maybe I need to, like, clean it better, but mine does smell quite bad. There is a woman who has made cheese out of the bacteria in her belly button.
No. Fuck that woman.
No.
Yep.
No.
Yep. Absolutely. Apparently, the average person has 67 species of bacteria swarming around in their belly button.
That is rank.
Don't care for these facts.
That's horrible.
It's like a tube seat.
Yeah. Mammals have belly buttons, obviously, because they have, like, umbilical cords and stuff.
No, they don't, because my dog doesn't have a belly button.
Dogs do have belly buttons.
They don't.
No, apparently they do. It's like a tiny little scar. So it's not going to look the same as ours.
Yeah.
But there's somewhere under her fur, there will be a little scar, which is where her belly button was.
I'm going to go look when I go home.
Yeah, because each puppy will have its own placenta.
Puppies.
Which it comes out with.
But, like, what do animals do in the wild? Just drag around the umbilical cord and placenta until it drops off.
Well, the mother eats the afterbirth. So.
Yeah, well, sometimes they'll, like, bite it off.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because my friend had a baby and you have, like, this form where it's, like, your birth plan. Like, what do you want for this? What do you want for that? Like, water birth or whatever. And as a joke, she wrote, due to religious beliefs, I would like my husband to gnaw through the umbilical cord.
Oh, no.
And they were like, no, she was joking, obviously, but, like...
No, I know.
Yeah. Yeah, and they were like, madam, do you... And she was like, I'm obviously kidding. Just do the normal stuff.
That's so funny.
Finally, okay, I found a BuzzFeed quiz. What does your belly button say about your personality? So, Alex, choose your belly button. Your options are classic straight up and down innie,
right.
Wide innie, medium outie, proper outie, weird black hole, and a T/J shape like I have.
I've got one where it's like not that far in, like you can see everything.
Yeah, no, I've got the same. Let me show me yours. We'll both reveal.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hang on, I'm going to investigate.
Okay, so I think mine's quite a deep innie.
I think yours is the first one, kind of classic, deep innie, kind of straight line up and down.
It's kind of deep personality.
Interesting.
See
yours
what I mean?
Is like a kind of innie outie. Like, I can see where it ends.
Yeah.
Good, but rossing down, putting my coat back on.
Okay, so Alex, your belly button is Confused.
Oh my God, so me.
It says, you seem to always be in the middle of everything and making a decision is the hardest thing in the world.
Correct.
You spend a lot of your time trying to seek approval from others, even at those moments when you think you are sure of yourself.
Jesus. Ooh. This belly button quiz is going in hard on Alex.
It's true. It is, yeah.
That's
I wouldn't say approval, but I'd say I want to keep everyone happy, yes.
Yeah. Also, you're not indecisive. Like, you just, like, make up your mind and just charge.
Yeah, true.
It's true, yeah.
Got a lot of things.
What's my belly button?
Do you reckon that's the closest one to Caroline's?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah? Okay. You got... Oh, come on. You got introvert.
Excuse me, I'm an interesting introvert.
Although you may be capable of human interaction, it exhausts you. No, like, really?
Fucking hell.
I don't know if this could be further from the truth. You hold on to your moments of solitude with your dear life. Well, that's true. And at the end of a hard or not so hard day's work, your bed and computer await your love.
I don't know. I think that's fairly good.
Yeah.
No, some of it is.
Yeah.
But not all the time.
No.
Like, you definitely have an extrovert.
I contain multitudes, people.
Side.
Yeah. Hannah, what are you?
I got old soul.
Oh, you are the oldest soul on earth.
This belly button quiz is all you need, guys.
Oh, yeah. My God. You are wise.
Fuck the zodiac.
Yeah.
You are wise beyond your years and often spend time alone contemplating the world around you.
True.
People feel very comfortable opening up to you and you love to listen. In difficult situations, you're able to see a clear resolution, making you a great leader.
Oh.
I kind of like that. This quiz is very wise.
It's very, very wise because, like, Hannah is actually the youngest of the three of us, but she's also the boss of this podcast.
Yeah.
And she wields with an iron fist.
Yeah,
I do.
Also, for a young person, you have a very comfortable relationship with disappointment. I feel like you're always expected to be disappointed in a very mature way.
That is the wisest thing you've ever said.
I'm an old soul.
You are an old soul.
Oh,
and I feel like I'm like a... Like, because I'm loud and I talk a lot, people don't realise how much I need to be alone so much of the time.
Yeah. So, what if they just looked at your belly button when they met you?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Skip all that awkward bit about me cancelling plans.
Yeah, they'd be like, I understand you.
Yeah.
No need to explain. I think maybe I've got an old soul stuck in my belly button and that's why it smells so bad.
Free me! It's like Ursula's lair when she's got all the mermaids all shriveled up. That's what's in your belly button.
Oh my God, it is.
Born on earth of all souls. Na na na. Na na na. Every so often on the School for Dumb Women, we invite you all into our tiny broom cupboard sized office that has one desk and lots of books on how to become a primary school teacher. And we offer a guidance counselling session, which, in light of this podcast, is just us going through Reddit relationships, finding a problem, and then trying to answer it even though nobody asked us to. So
that's just how guidance counsellors work, though.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Always giving unsolicited advice.
I didn't ask you if I wanted to be a lawyer. I had to come here for 10 minutes so I could get out of maths.
Okay, so today's Reddit relationships is... This guy I'm seeing doesn't like it when I post pictures of myself at the beach. He assumes I'm seeking attention or something and wouldn't compliment me on anything just because I took the pic for social media and not for him. My ex, however, would hype me up and support me. I am not sure if this is a red flag or what. What do you think?
I can sum this up in one sentence. Get back with your ex.
Yeah. Or not like not necessarily get back with your ex, but just like
get back with someone.
You were on a steadier course with that guy.
Yes.
Recorrect with somebody like that. Yeah, I think it's a massive red flag when a bloke has something like sassy to say about how a woman presents herself on social media.
Yeah,
like, completely.
Do what you want. And unless I think it's, at the detriment to somebody else.
Yeah, and I think the alarm bells start ringing. Like, already, he doesn't like it when I post pictures of myself at the beach. Like, not really cool. But the worst bit for me is he doesn't like it because I took the picture for social media and not for him.
Yeah. You don't take pictures...
What?
Like, for your boyfriend
all the time. What about... What if she was just taking her pictures for her friends? Which she is. If she's putting it on social media, she's doing it for her friends.
Right. I think that's a big thing. A huge conversation, the whole selfie generation selfie. They're all taking
pictures. Who is it for?
Who are you trying to impress? It's like, there is a bit of that. No one can accept that, a woman is just like, I look cracking today, and I want people to know. Like, what is wrong with that? Why does it have to be sexual? Why does it have to be about jealousy? Why can't it be about celebrating?
Why does he have to own her image when she's at the beach?
This guy is controlling. I can tell you right now.
Definite red flags.
Yeah.
However, for the sake of us not just saying the most basic thing ever
and
then finishing the podcast on a lazy note, I'm going to admit something, and I feel a bit like I'm being a bad feminist here, but there are people I follow on Instagram and social media who I feel like I'm getting like 5 or 6 astonishingly beautiful selfies of them a day.
Bloody hell.
Yeah. Or like, you know, them in bikinis and like all that kind of stuff. And I just feel like after a certain point when it's kind of a constant stream of how attractive they are, I'm a bit like, why are you doing this? Do you
yeah.
know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I get that, like, completely. And let's play devil's advocate. If you are on social media loads when you're with your partner, I always feel like you must be a bit bored.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's a fair point, because maybe it's a bit of a miscommunication and he's kind of saying, like, why are you taking all these selfies? Why are we not just hanging out at the beach? Like, maybe he's having to take the pictures and that's kind of a pain in the
maybe
ass.
He's become an Instagram boyfriend. Yeah. And he's like,
my friend had her friend to stay recently for a weekend, and then she was like, Alex, I had to take 174 pictures of her on Tower Bridge. That was one shot on Tower Bridge.
I kind of like respect these people who are able to like say to their boyfriends or their best friends, like, yeah, take a picture again, and like stand there and have like full on photo shoots in the middle of the street because they've seen a nice door they want
yeah.
to be up against.
Yeah. Like, but the like, shamelessness of it. I know. Oh my god, no.
I honestly, when I take pictures with people for like work or whatever, I feel so ashamed of myself if I ask for even one retake. I feel like I'm being so vain. Like, I don't know, maybe it's like, that's the slight, I mean, we're all millennials generally, but that's the slight generation difference of like, I still feel old enough to feel ashamed of what I look like.
Yeah. Yeah, and no. I think it's such a complicated matter as well, because you never kind of exactly know how much of them taking this photo is them feeling social pressure to present themselves in a yeah. certain way, to present themselves as someone who's just hanging out at the beach in a bikini, and how much of it is actually they just thought they looked good and wanted to like feel confident yeah. and they were like, yeah, I'll put that picture up. And you can never really know where that line is drawn for that person and kind of completely. You know, which side of it they fall.
Also, I think one of the red flags in this, I do think this guy is a massive red flag,
oh, yeah,
and we should get rid of him.
Yeah.
But the big red flag in this for me is the fact that it's the beach, so it's not about, it's about skin for him.
Yes.
He's like, he doesn't want anyone seeing his girlfriend's tits or his girlfriend's boobs or whatever, or boobs and tits, the same thing, or her arse, and like, it's very like a protective, like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the classic start of controlling behaviour, which is... Oh, I don't want people to see how gorgeous you are, because I want, I wanted that all to myself. But then you change the tone of that and it's like, I don't want anyone seeing what you look like. I want you all to myself.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
just
and
like,
that's really creepy.
It's ownership, yeah. right?
But also, what if he's just like, you're being really boring? Like,
exactly.
That's
well, if
a different
he is.
Conversation. Yeah. Then he needs to say that and not like, you're not taking these photos for me. Like,
yeah.
Cool. Bin him off, love.
Glad that we fixed that woman's relationship without her asking us to.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Well, that's the end of the podcast, guys. Thank you, as always, to Gavin Day for our logo, Harry Harris for our jingles, and Soho Radio Studios for recording. Thank you also to the anonymous person on Reddit who did not ask us a question. If you've enjoyed this episode, please do head over to the Apple Podcast Store and rate us, or if you're feeling very generous, leave us a review.
Bye!
Bye!
Bye! By the way, the whole time you've been doing this segment, in my head has just been, if you want it, let's do it.
Did you just bring up songs again?
My pony.
What?
Pony by Genuine. Literally the best song ever.
Okay. Right. Okay, Alex has sung again. That's what we have.
Sorry. You know it. It's in Magic Mike. It's like the sexiest song ever.
Oh, I do love that film.
Yeah.
So I'm glad there's pony references in it.
Yeah.
Approved.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.